Our teeth and oral hygiene are crucial for staying healthy. We're discussing dental hygiene in these times on The Morning Show. I'm Kedar Cheer-Kent. Glad you could be here. The pandemic exposed many shortcomings, as you know, in healthcare, one being ERs serving as the last resort for dental care. Also, dentists have reported anecdotally and captured in a survey last year by the American Dental Association a rise in cracked teeth, teeth grinding, and jaw issues, connecting it to pandemic-related stressors. What do you want to know about your oral health? What questions do you have about your mouth or your teeth? Can you afford dental care or rarely visit the dentist? Join in 800-642-1234. Dr. Monica Hebel is a general dentist in Milwaukee and Speaker of the House for the Wisconsin Dental Association, in which she served as past president. Dr. Hebel, welcome to the Ideas Network.
Good morning, Kate. Happy to be here.
Good morning. I understand you started your dental career at 14 years of age as a dental assistant, and that trajectory of you working at the same practice as a dentist is really remarkable. Can you tell us about how you started?
Sure. My sister was dating my brother-in-law. She was a dental hygienist. She worked for Dr. Stan Donahue, and so she got me the job. And once I started, I assisted residents from the dental school, and I had one who was a great mentor, a Green Bay prosthodontist, Dr. Joe Lesnowski. He used to quiz me. I decided that was what I wanted to do, but my guidance counselor, who was quite elderly, told me I couldn't because I was a girl. And that was all I needed, the motivation to go to school. And now I own the practice that I started in when I was 14.
That is absolutely remarkable. And to see your life in that, I suppose that one practice, that one building, as you've grown into your career as a dentist, that must feel deeply personal to you and the patients that you serve.
Right. We have moved since then, moved the location, changed the name. I practice with my brother-in-law, Mike Donahue, the son of the original owner, for many years, and he has recently retired. And it's just been the greatest, best decision of my life to be able to help people and make them be comfortable in a setting where people usually aren't comfortable has just been such a blessing in my life. And you know how lucky you are to have your work be your passion. And that's what I've had for my whole career.
I just love that story. How is your practice doing in these pandemic times? How is it COVID affecting you?
Well, so a lot of offices are jammed up because they're short staffed. There's a dental staff shortage, hygiene and assistants. But what's happened with this latest surge is that people, you know, you have a full schedule the next day and it just falls apart because so many people are getting sick. And so January has started off pretty slow with the rise in the surge in Omicron.
Some people have been reluctant to visit the dentist, afraid of the spread of COVID, but dentist offices, they're actually a really safe place.
Right. We haven't had a documented transmission in the dental office from dental treatment. And the American Dental Association has done surveys. 90% of people are comfortable going back. So that's a great return. But people are putting it off a little longer. So what I find is a lot of times it's been 2, 3, 4 years since somebody's been in because of the pandemic. And we're working on making sure that people understand how safe it is to come.
I would imagine then there is a lot of catch up to be done when your patient hasn't seen a dentist in years, several years.
Right. For some people, it ends up being okay. They're lucky. But for some, something that could have been easily treated turns into something much more complicated and expensive for them. And so that's why we just really want to encourage regular visits to the dentist, because your out-of-pocket cost will be so much less if you catch it at an early stage.
We're talking with Dr. Monica Hebel, who's a general dentist in Milwaukee, Speaker of the House for the Wisconsin Dental Association. You have a line to her. What do you want to know about your oral health? What are your questions about your mouth, your teeth? When was the last time you flossed? 800-642-1234. Let's go to Patricia in Colfax. Patricia, hi.
Hi. Thanks for having me on.
Sure.
I have a question for you. Why is it that dental care is not part of health care? Why are they separate? Because dental care, I believe, is very important. And at my age, I can afford dental care. I've never been able to afford it. I have hardly any teeth to chew my food with.
Oh, Patricia, thank you for that question. Dr. Hebel.
Right, Patricia, that is, it's really difficult when you lose so many teeth that you become almost handicapped for your oral health. And dentistry and medicine have been separate forever in our silos. We're working on trying to bridge that gap, but it's very complicated and it's entrenched. And so it's been a difficult thing to get together. There was a big move to put some oral health into Medicare, and it's just a complicated problem. There are clinics that will do reduced fee dentistry. So, and they're all across the state. And so you might want to check into that. There also are some Medicare plans, Medicare Advantage plans that give like $2,500 a year. Mm-hmm. So you might want to look into that as well and see if there's any help for you out there so we could get you back to being able to chew.
There are, as you said, sliding scale and reduced fee type dentistry practices out there. Also, some practices that I would imagine partner with universities that have dental programs.
Right. There's only one dental school in the state, and that's Marquette. That's mm-hmm. in Milwaukee. But there are eight technical schools for dental hygiene, and they usually have dental clinics as well.
Patricia, thank you for the call. Carol now in St. Charles, Illinois. Hi, Carol. What's on your mind?
Hi, Kate. Hi, doctor. Yes, I was just wondering, we live in the Chicagoland area, and, you know, it's 9,600,000 in Chicago and surrounding suburbs. And it's been very difficult for me to find a doctor that I felt comfortable putting in a crown. I had one put in, and it was my choice because it was a heavily filled back molar with a lot of mercury, and I thought it's going to give sooner or later. Better to be proactive, and the crown that I had put in never fit well. My tongue was cut up. I spent many sleepless nights. I went to another doctor. She ground it down, which helped tremendously, but then wanted to do these deep cleanings, which when I went to the fourth dentist, that I didn't need them. And I get that it was all about, the income for them and not what I needed. How do I, because, I just don't want to see anyone unless I've called around to see, you know, who suggested, but I haven't really gotten somebody that I, with a good commitment to a dentist.
Carol,
is there something I can do?
Yes, Carol, thank you. Dr. Hebel, how do you navigate crowns and what insights do you have there?
Well, I think trust is a really important part of the relationship between your dentist, and it's really important to find somebody that you do trust. And one of the best ways is word of mouth, talk to your friends. You can go through your insurance if you have insurance, and they often will be able to point you in a direction. And then there are online reviews. But once you find that person that you trust, it's golden. And I always tell people, you want to go somewhere. I might not be the right fit for you, but I want you to find the right fit. And crowns and treatment planning is really can be all over the board. And so again, that's where that trust comes in, that the person is doing what is right and best for you.
Can you walk us through when a crown is necessary and how that works?
Well, large fillings, like Carol was talking about, the pandemic has caused a lot of cracked teeth. So sometimes that's one of the most difficult things to diagnose in dentistry because it doesn't show up on an x-ray or visually, but you would notice it that you bite down on something, maybe a small seed or a pretzel, something hard, and it'll send a jolt of electricity. And the only way we can diagnose it is by replicating those symptoms. And so that's a tough one. And then sometimes there are just cracks that are visual, and those cracks can keep propagating and eventually become a problem. Mm. And so there's a continuum of people who are a little bit, dentist providers who are a little bit more conservative and more aggressive. And I think it's really important that's a match between what the patient wants and what the dentist, how they practice.
Dr. Monica Hebel with us, Milwaukee dentist, fielding your questions about oral health. When was the last time you flossed your teeth? How many times a day do you brush? When was your last checkup? Have you put off a crown because it was too costly? What did you do instead? 800-642-1234. Back in a minute with Dr. Hebel here on the Ideas Network. We're discussing a trip to the dentist on The Morning Show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. Oral health affects our ability to eat food, to talk, smile, show emotions. According to the CDC, oral conditions that most affect overall health and quality of life are cavities, severe gum disease, and severe tooth loss. 1 in 4 adults has cavities. What questions do you have about cavities or gum disease or tooth loss? What dental issue has your dentist talked with you about recently or over the years? When did you first take your child to the dentist and how did it go? 800-642-1234. Dr. Monica Hebel, general dentist in Milwaukee, with us for the hour. Let's go to Sue now from Twin Lakes. Hi, Sue. What would you like to bring up?
Hi. I have a 4.5-year-old grandson. He fell and hit his mouth on the floor. Now, there was a little bit of bleeding, didn't impact him too much, but now a few weeks later, one of his front teeth is turning gray. We're wondering, does he need to see a dentist, or as a baby tooth, is that simply going to fall out and be replaced by a permanent tooth?
Great question, Sue. Dr. Hebel.
Right, so anytime there's trauma to a tooth, the tooth can abscess or become infected. And when it turns gray, that means that the nerve inside has died or is dying. So he definitely should be seen and checked out by a dentist and monitored over time. Often those teeth can remain in the mouth until they fall out naturally and the permanent tooth comes in. What you should look for is a bump or a pimple up at where the root of the tooth would be. And then that would be an emergency. But I would definitely recommend that you get him in to see a dentist. Age 1 is the recommended first visit for a child, and or 6 months after the eruption of the first tooth. So that's around age 1. So if he hasn't had a dental visit, you should get him in there.
What would a visit be like for toddlers and very young children?
It's a knee-to-knee exam, so it's the parent or the grandparent is holding the child around on their lap, and the child lays back into the dentist's lap, and that way they can see really well. They hold the child's hands, and it's a really nice way because you can hold the child a little easier, and everyone gets to see, and then you're looking for signs of problems. You do anticipatory guidance so that the reason that the age got changed from 3 to 1 is so that we can prevent problems. We were seeing children coming in at age 3 with cavities already. And so we want to make sure that the parents know what can get the child into trouble with cavities and talk about what to do if there's trauma. And then there's a fluoride varnish that gets applied. And then as the child gets more comfortable, eventually they'll sit in the dental chair and kind of graduate to a more regular appointment. But in the beginning, it's a knee-to-knee. And I will do knee-to-knees for as long as the children are comfortable in a knee-to-knee situation instead of in the chair, as you get a much better look.
Hmm, that's really interesting. Why have you seen more cavities turning up in three-year-olds and very young children?
Right, that's just been a trend. I blame it on sippy cups. They're like magic. They don't spill. The sippy cups that I use with my kids, if they walked around, they would be sprinkling something sticky on the floor wherever they went, but these just are vacuum sealed. And so it's basically like having a child drink a bottle all day if they put something sugary in that sippy cup. And so I don't really know why it's happening, but it's happening across all socioeconomic groups. And so that's why we changed it to age one.
We're talking with Dr. Monica Hebel, who is a general dentist in Milwaukee, fielding your questions about oral health. How often do you drink sugary beverages? What impact is that having on your teeth? What's your favorite thing about your smile? 800-642-1234. Ivy is joining us from Evansville. Hi, Ivy. Go ahead.
Hi. I just wanted to bring to light my brother, who is on disability. Had an ear infection with pus coming out of it and everything, and for a year was treated for an ear infection and with antibiotics, and it would go away and come back and go away. Turned out it was an abscessed tooth, and apparently these can lead to heart problems if not taken care of. And I just wanted to give a plug for Biden's Build Back Better, wanted to include dental care in people's, you know, who can afford it, their health care. And I just have never seen why dental care is not part of your health care when it can lead to so many problems. So thank you.
Thank you, Ivy. Dr. Hebel, Ivy bringing up first a tooth abscess, this pocket of pus and the earache issue.
Right. I mean, dental emergencies can turn into medical emergencies, and it's been very difficult for anybody who's challenged with a disability. The Medicaid program that usually covers them has been underfunded and hasn't had a raise in 20 years. Now, January, an increase just went in. So I'm hopeful that will help access to care for that population. But anybody who has an abscess, often they go to the emergency room and they get antibiotics, but if they don't follow up, that's coming back. It will not cure it until you take care of the tooth. And people can get very, very ill and very, very fast. So if in fact somebody has an abscess, they should definitely find a dentist. The emergency room is not the right spot for you.
What is going on with an abscess tooth? Can you explain the dental aspect of it?
Sure. Let's say there's two problems you can have in your mouth. One is a tooth problem. The other is a gum and bone problem. So an abscess is usually a tooth problem. And that means that somebody had a cavity and it got so large that it got into the nerve of the tooth and the nerve gets infected. And then it spreads to the bone and gum around the tooth. And mm-hmm. It can be very, very painful. And then there also can be a gum and bone abscess where you lose so much bone that holds the tooth in the jaw, but the gum stays up high and the germs can get in there, and that can cause a different kind of abscess. And gum abscess is often, by the time they hurt, there's not much we can do about it. With a tooth abscess, you can have a root canal and fix that tooth.
You know, in a cleaning, the dentist starts with looking for bumps and kind of running fingers around the tongue. What are you looking for there?
Usually that's an oral cancer screening. So we don't want any lumps or bumps that shouldn't be there. And so usually you'll have to stick out your tongue and lift your tongue up. And we're looking for any abnormal pathology so that we can find it and refer, make sure that, and get you the right treatment if there's any cancer or abnormalities.
General Dentist Monica Hebel fielding all questions about oral hygiene. Are you wondering about crowns or cavities? What about fluoridated water, getting dental sealants in childhood? When was the last time you flossed? How often do you brush? Join in 800-642-1234. We'll pick this up, more conversation with Dr. Hebel after a news update. Stay with us on the Ideas Network. We're discussing what it means to have good oral health on The Morning Show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. According to Mayo Clinic, our oral health is more important than we might realize, and problems with our mouth can affect the rest of our body. We're learning how to protect oral health with your questions front and center. How are the bristles on your brush? What questions do you have about floss versus a water pick? Are you pregnant and noticing changes to your oral health? Join in on maintaining teeth, tooth decay, cleanings, crowns, all of it. 800-642-1234. Monica Hebel is a general dentist in Milwaukee with us for the hour. Let's go to Aaron now in Madison. Hi, Aaron.
Hi, I was just wondering when the treatment perioscaling or deep cleaning or partial deep cleaning is recommended. A couple of times when I went to the dentist and when I lived in Texas, this was a very commonly recommended treatment for me. But since moving to Wisconsin, it seems it's not necessary. So I was just wondering when it would be recommended and if it kind of is suggested to raise money for the dentist more than a medical need. Thanks.
Aaron, thank you. Dr. Hebel.
Well, hopefully that means that you got healthier, Aaron, when you moved to Wisconsin and you don't need it anymore. One of the ways to tell is they do an exam where they're calling out the numbers for the measurements of your pockets between your tooth and your gum. Normal measurements are 0 to 3. And if you start hearing 4s, 5s, and 6s, then you know that a deep cleaning is probably going to be recommended. No, that's usually a verbal thing because between somebody who's recording those numbers.
So what is this deep cleaning? What does it entail?
So a normal cleaning is above the gum tissue, everything getting cleaned above the gum tissue. Often what happens is you get buildup below the gum, and that buildup causes a reaction in the gum and the bone, and it makes it bleed and get inflamed. And that inflammation is one of the just really horrible things that can happen because inflammation messengers go throughout your whole body. And that's where that connection from oral health to overall health becomes so important. So it really is critical that you don't have inflammation in your mouth. And so the best way to prevent that inflammation is to make sure you're really systematically brushing every tooth morning and night and flossing or doing some kind of interproximal cleaning every day as well. And so that pocket can get so deep that the bristles don't get in there, and you need to have a fresh start and get that buildup off of there and remove the biofilm and the germs that are in that pocket. But it's not a one and done thing. It's something often, you know, you do a deep cleaning and then somebody might disappear for a year or two. And it's something that you do it in the dental office. It matters more what you do at home, but you have to come regularly to make sure that if anything is getting built up, we can get it off before it starts causing those problems.
So is periodontal scaling painful or how long does it take for the gums to heal after that procedure?
Well, usually sometimes it depends how sensitive your teeth are. And so people will give anesthetic if it's uncomfortable. And then usually the mouth is a wonderful place because it heals so quickly. And if you as get in there and clean after it's done, usually 2 weeks, and you can see an immense improvement and in most of the areas. And then it's important to be monitored to make sure that any of the residual areas can get treated. Because with gum disease, by the time it hurts, it's usually too late to do much about it.
Yes. I can hear that the dental office is alive and kicking this morning. Patients are calling.
All right.
Well, let's take another call now. Jenny is joining us from Madison. Jenny, I understand that you just got a crown?
I did. It's a back molar on the bottom left. And when I left the office, you know, they did all the testing to make sure the bite was good and I couldn't detect that it was there and there was no pain and whatever. Everything felt fine. A week later, I was just eating something as simple as scrambled eggs and I felt a jolt of pain deep right in the center for that tooth. And so I was very surprised. And so that's been, I've given it 3 weeks now, hoping it was just something that could die down, but it hasn't really gone away. So soft things like a gummy. The only thing I can add to this story that might help is the day before I first felt that pain, I was snorkeling. And when I snorkel, I tend to be cold and kind of clamp down on the mouthpiece or the snorkel. So I probably was in the water with that snorkel in my mouth for maybe half an hour, 45 minutes at the most. And that's the only thing I can think of that was different. I was wondering if you have any theory. And when they put this crown on, I was experiencing similar type of pain, and they said it was cracked tooth syndrome, and the crown was recommended to prevent an eventual root canal or the tooth just breaking apart.
Have you had any follow-up since the crown or since this pain?
Actually, I have an appointment this week.
Okay. Dr. Hebel, what are your insights here?
Well, I'm jealous. I wonder where she was snorkeling because I'm sure it wasn't in one of our lakes. sounds wonderful. So there are a couple things that can happen after you have a crown for a cracked tooth. One, the nerve can die in the tooth from the crack, and the crack could be deeper than a crown can fix. So I'm glad that you have an appointment to go check it out. But the fact that you mentioned this snorkeling, it could also be that your bite is just a little bit off, not where you normally bite, but when you move to a side or front towards the front. And maybe when you were snorkeling, you might have been hitting that tooth and getting it sore. There's actually a ligament that holds your tooth in the bone, and that can get sore just like a knee ligament can get sore. And so often when we put a crown in, we change your bite just ever so slightly. And even microns of a difference can make a difference in someone's bite. And it can cause them to daytime clench where they check it with their teeth a bunch of times during the day, or it can cause nighttime clenching. And that can cause the same kind of feeling that you're having. So I'm hoping that some kind of an adjustment can make a difference for you, because after you have a crown, the last thing you want to do is drill a hole in it and go do a root canal. But that is a possibility that could help make that feel better. And so getting it checked out is the best course of action.
Jenny, thank you for the call. We're talking with Dr. Monica Hebel, who is a general dentist. Taking your questions about oral health this hour, 800-642-1234. Nancy is joining us from Grafton. Hi, Nancy. What is on your mind?
Morning.
Good morning.
The sun is shining.
Yes, but chilly.
Well, anyhow, when I was a little kid, I was a little farm girl up there in Marison County, anyhow, and I had to go to the dentist, and oh my gosh, I was about 8 years old, and oh man, he was drilling away in my tooth, and it hurt so bad, and there was no numbing or anything, and I was hanging on to the side of the dental chair. Oh gosh, I thought I'd break my bones, you know, because it really hurt so gosh darn bad. And to this day, I can tell you that experience when I was just a little girl. I just do not care about going to a dentist. And I can thank him for having dentures and having few teeth and all that stuff, because he scared the heck out of me. It hurt so bad. Mm. But now I do have a dentist now, and he's a real darling, but that's his last name, because his grandpa and his dad and now that's three generations already. So, but
well, Nancy,
I tell you, get a child to a dentist who cares and is gentle. And nowadays, it's probably not the way it was many, many, many years ago.
And Nancy, you bring up such an important point here about the fear of dentists. And Dr. Hebel, can you talk about that fear?
Right. I mean, once you have a bad experience, it's so hard to erase it. It just grows bigger and bigger. So what I tell patients is to try and be specific about what they're really afraid of. When you keep it all in a big ball of yarn, it's very difficult to fight it. But if you unravel it and say, you know, I'm afraid of getting a shot. That's usually what people are afraid of. I'm afraid of that it's going to hurt. We can attack it one thing at a time and try and get people to relax. One of the things I love is turning people into relaxed dental patients. But if you've had a bad experience, it is difficult to overcome that. I will tell you that dental care now is not as painful as it used to be. It is so much easier. So if you're one of those people that are sitting on the sidelines, give it a chance. There's so much that we can do to make you comfortable.
What are those huge advancements that have made being in the chair less scary or less traumatizing?
Well, I mean, Nancy talked about going when you didn't get anesthetic, but we can make sure that you don't feel any pain. And I think that taking the time to explain it and I don't know, I get really high marks for giving good injections. So there's technique involved. And that trust that we talked about earlier, it's just so important to trust the person that's working on you. And then just one at a time. So if it's the pain that you're worried about, we can make sure that it's not hurting. Tell you that if it was going to hurt, it would have hurt already. And then my biggest compliment is when someone actually falls asleep in the dental chair.
So relaxing.
Yes, right. And it does happen. It does happen, believe it or not.
Then you, at the end of the procedure, you have to gently wake them up and say,
yes,
you know.
right.
Well, exactly. It's been a good dose. We're talking with Dr. Monica Hebel, fielding all your questions about oral health and maintaining teeth and gums. She's a general dentist in Milwaukee. Do you become anxious when it's time to visit the dentist? What kind of relationship do you have with your dentist? Are you thinking about going into dentistry? What are you curious about the profession? And what do you want to ask about? Still time to talk, 800-642-1234. Back in a minute with Dr. Hebel here on the Ideas Network. It's the morning show. I'm Kate Archer Kent. Our mouth reflects our general health and well-being. And according to the CDC, by age 8, over half of children have had a cavity in their baby teeth. How do you help your child brush? Do you model good behavior in oral hygiene? Dr. Monica Hebel is with us for about 10 more minutes. Let's go to Bob now in Franklin. Hi, Bob. Go ahead.
Hi. Thank you. My previous dentist used to recommend a fluoride treatment every time I had my teeth cleaned. And since the insurance doesn't cover that, is it really necessary, or are they just trying to make more money?
Dr. Hebel, what about those fluoride treatments?
Well, caries is on the increase, and that's cavities are on the increase. And a lot of times as we age, our roots show on the teeth, the gum and bone shrink away. And when the roots show, they're at higher risk of getting cavities. So there are multiple ways to get more fluoride on your teeth. There's rinses, which aren't that strong. And then there's prescription strength gels or toothpaste. and there's fluoride treatments in office. And I think that you could actually have more effect if you use the fluoride more regularly instead of just once in the dental office, but applied it nightly or a couple times a week. So if you're high risk for dental decay or dental cavities, it's a great tool. It's one of the only tools we have to strengthen teeth to resist those cavities from forming.
Bob, thank you for that question. Teeth whitening toothpaste, do you see the strips, other products, marketed, available over the counter? How healthy is teeth whitening products?
Well, you can get into trouble with certain teeth whitening products, and that's why you definitely want to have somebody overseeing it. Plus, you can have some problems with sensitivity, and those roots that I was just talking about can be extremely sensitive when they get the tooth bleach on them. And I think you want to make sure you get it checked out and make sure somebody's following you in case you run into a problem like that.
Let's move on to dentures now with Shirley in Spooner. Hi, Shirley. Go ahead.
I was wondering, what is good oral hygiene for me? I have upper and lower dentures, and they fit pretty nice, and I've had them for years and years and years. But is there a mouthwash that I can use to keep my gums healthy, or maybe even a toothpaste to kind of take a toothbrush and brush over my gums?
Shirley, thank you.
Well, I think it's really important to make sure that you're taking them out at least for 4 hours every day, so that those gums get a chance to breathe. The plaque doesn't stick to gums as much as teeth. So I think it's more important that when you take your dentures out, you're brushing the dentures and making sure that they're clean. And any mouth rinse, Listerine product, or even a very dilute hydrogen peroxide rinse, not every day with the hydrogen peroxide, but occasionally, could help.
What are causes of bad breath? What might be going on?
If you have gum disease, that can contribute to bad breath, but most bad breath, halitosis, comes from behind your mouth, postnasal drip, or stomach issues.
Okay. Let's go to Mary in Eau Claire. Mary, hi. You're continuing on with the dentures. I see conversation. Go ahead.
Hello. I'm not afraid of the dentist. I've had good dentists, but I moved and I don't have one now. And I have lost a lot of teeth, and I have some kind of underneath my gums where the bone is has grown, and it doesn't look like dentures will fit over that.
And I'm sorry, Mary, do you have dentures?
No.
You do not?
No, neither do I have teeth.
I see. And so you're wondering then about how dentures would fit over some bones around the gums.
Well, I knew someone who had that problem, and they ended up wiring her mouth closed after an operation. I don't want to go anywhere near that situation.
Oh, goodness. Dr. Hebel.
Well, so as soon as you take teeth out, the bone starts to disappear. And so it can get, the longer you're without teeth, it can get more and more difficult for dentures to fit. And so it's important to get in and see if that's the case. Then there are implants that can be used to help stabilize those dentures once the bone is so low that the dentures are kind of moving around too much. Those are expensive, but it's at least a solution. The other thing is that it's really important once you have dentures to go and get that oral cancer screening, you know, once a year, and get your dentures checked, because teeth can wear and the dentures can become loose, and that can make the tissue grow up and get unhealthy underneath the denture.
What about dentures versus tooth implants?
Well, if someone can afford the implants, it's so much nicer because they're kind of locked down. They don't move around. So dentures, people who end up in dentures generally have more issues because they don't work as well as natural teeth or as implant supported teeth.
I see. Let's go to Lynn now in Madison. Lynn, hi, what is your question?
Yeah, I had a tooth pulled in a molar on the bottom of my tooth, in my mouth, and that was in August. And then when I went, my dentist had, you know, looked my teeth over and said, yeah, I took an x-ray, you need your tooth pulled. And then, so I did, but before I left, she also said to me, by the way, you have periodontal disease, and very nasty. So it's like, I don't want to go back to her. And I guess I trying to, you know, what do I do, I guess?
Lynn, thank you. Dr. Hebel, periodontal disease, excuse me.
Right. That's one of those. It's kind of silent until it's too late to do anything about it. You could go on WDA.org or the ADA.org. There's a find a dentist button and you put in your zip code and you'll get a custom list. And that might be a way. The way we say it and the way it's heard, a lot of times people feel like we're yelling at them and we don't mean to be, but again, communication is really important. It's unfortunate that you left feeling like, you know, you were being chastised or whatever. It wasn't a good situation. So it's always nice to go back and try again, but if that isn't something you want to do, you could always ask your friends, look through your insurance. But I would take that to heart, that it doesn't mean you should go away for too long, because if you lost a tooth to periodontal disease and the dentist was telling you there was periodontal disease, it means you need to follow up as soon as possible.
I want to land on mouth guards. And you've coached, I understand, grade school and high school basketball. For which sports should people use a mouth guard?
Well, for many more than they do. It's any contact sport. And even when you're sleeping, that's not a contact sport, but a lot of people are really damaging their teeth while they're asleep because
grinding.
Grinding. So mouth guards come in handy for more than just sports. But it's the, when you're wearing them for sports, it's hard to breathe. They're I'd say kind of unhygienic. If you watch any sports teams where they're taking them out and putting them behind their ear and after they've touched the basketball and in this era of COVID. And you can get them over the counter. In fact, they were sold out in the athletic department. So they're a hot item right now.
Well, Dr. Hebel, thank you for joining us.
Well, thank you so much for having me.
Dr. Monica Hebel is a general dentist at Burleigh Dental in Milwaukee. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. It's The Morning Show, and you're listening to the Ideas Network.